Everyone, welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. It's an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your host, George Gordon. The Law Hour is heard live, daily, 7 days a week, and worldwide on the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on circumcision. Science or fraud? Right after this message. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said that? If a carpenter said to you, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Well, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about it. He said, quote, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And it's worse than that." Worse than that, he said. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And he said a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. And courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc with the paperwork and discs, a complete education for courtroom strategy. It's designed for home education. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Circumcision. Where did it get started and what's it all about anyway? Not everyone is circumcised. Jews practice circumcision. The Muslims practice circumcision, and certain other religious groups around the world practice circumcision, but why? What's the purpose behind it? Muslims don't worship the same God that the Christians do. Their God is called Allah, and they have a different set of morals and standards that they live by and meet than do the people here in the Christian world. And even in the Christian world, we find that multiple millions of people are circumcised, but the question is why? Well, let's take a look at the history of circumcision in the United States from the physicians and from the lawyers. Let's take a look at circumcision from the perspective of the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims. And let's see if we can get a handle on this concept. What's the purpose behind it? Where did it get started and why do we do it? Well, a new era or new era of liability for physicians, hospitals, and parents. A treatise written by Richard W. Morris, he's an attorney. He said, every person who unlawfully and maliciously deprives a human being of a member of his body or disables, disfigures, or renders it useless, or cuts or slits the tongue, or puts out an eye, or slits the nose, ear, or lip is guilty of mayhem, so says the California Civil Code. Now, there are, of course, situations in which consent eliminates criminality from acts which would otherwise constitute assault, battery, or even mayhem, such as consent given for a surgical procedure, which is for the benefit of the patient. You know, I guess like cutting your appendix up. Well, such consent by the individual, let alone the parent, would be invalid for the slitting of the tongue, nose, ear, or lip if such act were not for the benefit of the patient. Certainly, if the patient were not in a position to consent, the act would be mayhem at worst and battery at best. In any case, it is a crime. Now, can you imagine a doctor's defense to the charge of mayhem by cutting a split in the nose of a newborn baby, being that it would keep the nose cleaner, or slicing the ear so the Q-tips could enter and fit in better? I don't think any time would be lost in suing the good doctor. How then does the picture change when a day or so after birth, the doctor takes the 6-pound bundle of humanity into a dark room where the baby's screams cannot be heard by the parents, then straps the little baby's legs and arms apart in a spread eagle position on a torture board called a circumstraint, and uses no anesthetic, picks up a scalpel, and begins the only out-and-out act of torture performed by American physicians? Now, let us review what is about to be unmercifully attacked. The penis terminates on the end, not attached to the body, in a conical, fleshy substance called the glands. The skin covering the penis is prolonged forward in a loose fold. This covers the glands and has an inner lining of the character of a mucous membrane. The prolonged portion of skin with its lining is called the prepuce, or foreskin. This is the target. With the penis, pardon me for using that word, I meant to say dillywhacker, in one hand and a scalpel in the other, the torturer, masquerading as a doctor, slits vertically along the foreskin. The blade cuts, the blood spurts, the tiny unconsenting victim screams in pain. The victim's cortisone levels go up in response to the pain. The pain is so intense that the sleep-wakeful parents are altered for several days. But the torture has only just begun. The pain is that which you would feel from slitting the membrane which connects your tongue to the floor of your mouth. The foreskin lies bleeding, cut in half. Now, the initial wound has been made to the previously healthy and uninjured foreskin. A circular cup is then placed tightly over the end of the penis like a condom. This is to protect the glands so that a mistake will not cut too much, and it allows a clean slice of the knife to remove the foreskin. The cap is removed with the foreskin, leaving only the mutilated stump. Now the mayhem is complete. For the doctor, it is quick, painless, and profitable, and until now, safe from malpractice claims. Only the victim's crying, a little blood, and the unstrapping of the victim from the rack remains to be done. But is the doctor still safe from suit? Or is the hospital, or even the parents who consented to this torturous technique? Older primitive tribes circumcised females also, and this was done at puberty by cutting off the labia minora. How long would Gloria Steinem stand for this, or California Chief Justice Rose Byrd? How long would it take now the National Organization of Women to march on Washington or file a class action suit against all doctors, hospitals, and patients for circumcising girls? Somehow, what is horrible to do to a female is a matter of course to do to the male. What is child abuse to a girl is the thing to do to a boy. Why is there no uprising or march on Washington? Could it be that men don't have the, well, to protect their... Even every excuse for this barbaric practice has been proven to be false. There is no valid medical reasons for circumcision. Only the United States and Israel do this as a matter of course. No other civilized nation in the world does it without medical justification in specific cases. If it were not an unthinking habit, parents and doctors both would shrink in horror from circumcision. If there is no medical reason for the procedure, it is mayhem. Well, now you can see here that this good lawyer is not in favor of circumcision, and he's painted a pretty bleak picture so far, now hasn't he? And yet, by 1971, 90% of American males born in this country were circumcised. The number's down to around 60% as I make this report to you in 2004. Why did we ever do circumcision? Isn't it a Jewish practice anyway, and how did Christians get involved in it? And you notice the lawyer says this is mayhem over here, and yes, I think he's right. If we were doing this to girls, I think there would be an outcry. But it's pretty well established, isn't it? I know I'm circumcised, and of course I was circumcised as a baby, so I don't really remember the story that's just been described. I don't remember how painful it was or if it was painful at all. I do have two friends of mine who, in later years, as adults, were circumcised. Both of them told me that it was painful. They used, by the way, anesthetic at the time. And circumcision, the last guy I talked to, they wanted $5,000 to do a circumcision as an adult. I don't know if the doctor had a big boat payment or an airplane payment to make. He finally went down to Mexico, I think it was Tijuana, Mexico, and had it done there for about $1,000. But even at that, it was a little on the pricey side. Right now, today, the Jewish rabbi here in Springfield, Missouri, who happens to be a doctor, he's a medical doctor, does it for $75. You can have your baby circumcised in Springfield, Missouri, by the local rabbi for $75. But based upon what we've heard so far, why would you want to? Boy, this is a heavy-duty picture that this lawyer is painting. Of course, this is the other side. This is the side that says, well, this is child abuse. This is something that you want to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. My purpose for bringing this report is to analyze this from both sides. Is this religion or is this science? Notice that the good lawyer here points out that there are no medical reasons for circumcision. Is that really true? I think that I have read a place or two, and I'm going to present some medical reasons for circumcision, but is circumcision done for a medical purpose? Is that the reason that it got started? Who started it anyway? Where did this concept come from? It was my understanding that it got started with a guy named Abraham and the God of the Hebrews, you know, the God of the Jews, the God of the Christians, the Jesus Christ of the New Testament, you know, the God of the Old Testament. He's the guy that started this concept. But if he did, what did he do that for? And I heard that there was a covenant or a contract with Abraham. And Abraham, the progenitor of the Israelites, was the first guy to be circumcised. And if so, has anybody ever produced this covenant? Has anybody ever produced this contract? That's what a covenant is, you know, it's a contract. Now, contracts most often are reduced to writing, although the very definition of a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. So, in reality, all contracts, by their very nature, are oral. Contracts are not written. All contracts are oral. Now, when a contract is reduced to writing, the written instrument isn't the contract. The written instrument is the highest and best evidence of the contract, which was an offer, an acceptance, over time with consideration. Is there any evidence of this contract with Abraham? Well, as we progress along here toward the end of this discussion on circumcision, I'm going to produce for you the written contract. And then I'm going to produce for you the offer, the acceptance, the consideration, and the time that was ascribed to this contract and the written evidence, which is the highest and best evidence of the contract. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's take a look at some more here. The attorney now has painted a pretty bleak picture. Now, I'm circumcised, but I'm not advocating circumcision. Circumcision, you know, is a decision that everybody has to make. And it would seem like to me that we ought to have informed consent. Somebody ought to produce the contract with Abraham. Somebody ought to produce the medical evidence. Somebody ought to, and I thought I would start here with the other side of the argument. Circumcision, as far as I can tell, is a given. I was circumcised. My boys were all circumcised. Everybody that I know is circumcised. And so I got to thinking about, well, why? You know, we weren't particularly religious. My dad and my Uncle Carol were both circumcised, and I wondered, why did my grandmother have them circumcised? She never went to church. She wasn't religious. She wasn't a Jew. She wasn't even a Christian. And yet she practiced circumcision on her children, and I practiced it on my children, and I thought, well, gosh, why did we do that? Well, he goes on to say, not only is there no medical justification, there is no religious justification. Ah, not even any religious justification. As long ago as 1869, the father of modern Judaism in America, Isaac M. Wise, at the rabbinical conference in Philadelphia, proposed the abolition of circumcision on the grounds that it is a measure of extreme cruelty when performed upon adults. This proposal was actually adopted by the Reformed rabbis of America at the New York conference in 1892. If it is extreme cruelty for an adult, what sort of a monster would inflict such torture on a helpless infant? Circumcision is the survival of one of the insanities of religion based upon the ignorance and the superstition of primitive man. What is the liability today of a doctor who does a circumcision? On the civil side, what is more than the malpractice area, it would appear that each circumciser faces the threat of a lawsuit until 1 or 2 years after the victim reaches the age of 18 years. What is the dollar amount of that liability? Well, who knows? This is a case where an attorney could present all of the details of taking the child to the room, kidnapping, and restraint, false imprisonment, the blood and gore of the operation, assault, battery, and mayhem, and show it to an international, or to be rather, an intentional tort, not professional negligence. These acts may well be outside the scope of proper professional activity. And if so, the $250,000 limitation of damages imposed by California Civil Code may not apply, and malpractice insurance policies may not cover the liability. Intentional torts permit punitive damages, and punitive damages are designed to punish. And by the way, insurance policies do not cover punitive damages. Now, what are the actual damages? This tough question is answered by the jury. Picture this, if you will. The attorney says to the jury, for a dollar, you might permit somebody to stick a pin in your thumb. For $1,000, you might even let somebody cut you superficially with a knife. How much, gentlemen of the jury, would you charge to have your penis maimed? Now, once that question is answered with a dollar sign, the next question is, how many dollars will it take to teach that doctor a lesson called punitive damages so that the doctor doesn't do it again? Keep in mind, the attorney says to the jury, this doctor and others have been making $50 million each and every year doing this unnecessary and cruel act. Do not let them profit at and by their wrongdoing. Make them pay more than they earn, and they will stop. Teach them a lesson that they will never forget. And who is most guilty? Those who know better but still cut. Do you hear me, you OBs? The one who bears the greatest guilt of all is the one who urges parents not to circumcise and yet will do it for dollars. Now that is mayhem for money. Criminally, the circumciser is guilty of assault, battery, kidnapping, false imprisonment, mayhem, and child abuse. The district attorney should as routinely prosecute these cases as he does child beating. What liability does the hospital incur for providing for a fee, of course, the torture chamber, the rack, and the knife? A lot. Suffice it to say that the hospital should be included as a party defendant when suing the doctor. What liability do the parents incur for consenting to this? The parents are charged with the duty of protecting their children, and when the parents violate this duty, they may be sued. There is no longer a parent-child immunity. If the parents affirmatively request that someone practicing medicine with the mentality of a savage maim the child has an additional target defendant, and that's the parents, the mother and the father. As children come of age and become aware of this, we should see many suits filed against those who took part in this bit of debauchery and butchery. Parents who consented based upon the advice of their physician might now consider, or reconsider rather, have themselves appointed as a guardian ad litem and seek to recover for the sons the dollar value of the horror that the innocent child suffered. The doctors and the hospitals just might get financially circumcised. Now, if we can't get this message across, then what is it that we need to do to get this message across? Now let's take a look at it from another perspective. If we can't get this message across, then Christ died in vain. Is there some religious reason why circumcision shouldn't be practiced? Now he goes on to say, I've been talking against circumcision since 1948, and I've gone at it full-time for the last 4 years. But have the myths and misconceptions about circumcision abated any in recent years because of my work and the better information put out by the doctors who do know better? Yes, we can now report there has been some progress. But I'm sorry to say that it really hasn't helped as much as I had hoped that it would. The religionists are fighting us all the way. They always quote Paul from Acts 16, verse 3. Where he, Paul, circumcised Timothy because of the Jews. What they don't read is Galatians 2 verse 1 through 5 or Galatians 5, 10 through 12 or Philippians 3, 2 or Titus 1, 10. What they do read is Galatians 5, 6 where Paul said, for in Christ neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. The reader then interprets that to mean it doesn't make any difference one way or the other. So just go ahead and have your child mutilated if you wish and feel comfortable about it. Well, those who cling to the Old Testament, even though they call themselves Christians, will always quote from Matthew 5:17, where Christ said, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Well, yes, Christ said that. It seems the Bible is all things to all people. They can find whatever they want in it to support their own beliefs. So what a terrifying difference between this false conception and the truth. This just goes to show how people can interpret and reinterpret the Bible to suit themselves. I guess it is the law of human behavior. They just do what they want and then rationalize and try to justify it afterwards. I must say, that's a strange interpretation or construction of Matthew 5:17 through 20. I've never quite heard it put that way before. The guy says, Jesus did say, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. Well, if he didn't come to destroy them, then circumcision's probably still in full force and effect. And then he goes on to lambast you people for believing what Jesus told you. That's an oddity. We'll talk about that a little later in the program here. Religion without proper leadership has been one of the greatest curses to ever affect mankind. But now, with the help of several ministers and a biblical research foundation from California, I have put together enough material so that any minister could put together a very convincing sermon against circumcision without upsetting the Bible-thumping churchgoers because it's right out of the Bible. Well, after all, the guy did say, you can construe the Bible any way you want, can't you? And I guess that's what this guy is intending to do. He goes on to say, I pray that our society can survive the influence that misunderstood religion has had on our lives. Christ spoke out against the evils of his day, and it is as it is with me. Didn't take very long to see that people were offended at him. Love, not hatred, is what we desire. Or love, rather than, or not hatred, is what we desire. But Jesus warned us that we may expect the opposite of what we prefer. Jesus did so much for us, and still, he was hated and rejected by the scribes and Pharisees, and even held counsel against him to see how they might destroy him. I might point out that Jesus was circumcised. And Jesus was circumcised on the eighth day. Jesus was circumcised pursuant to the Old Testament scriptural provisions for circumcision. He fulfilled that law. It was a law that was intact. Remember, it was Moses that gave us that law on circumcision. Abraham signed the contract. Moses gave us the statutes. Jesus fulfilled it and said that he didn't come to destroy the law or the prophets. So I just thought I'd point that out. In fact, this guy just pointed that out himself. He says, you know, you fundamentalists out there, you go straight to Matthew 5:17. I would say that that's probably where anybody ought to go to find out from Jesus, did he come to abolish the law and circumcision? And he said he didn't. But this guy's not through yet, and you got to remember that this is quite a little topic. There are 6 billion people in the world. We presume that half of them are men, half of them are male. A lot of those 3 billion males, you know, most around the world are not circumcised. Most are not circumcised. So the majority of people in the world don't practice circumcision. So it's a minority that do practice it, and the way this lawyer is putting it out, it's unscriptural, it's mayhem, it's wicked and evil, it's painful, it's barbaric, it's child abuse, and it's all these things. This guy's making a pretty good case against circumcision, I would say. Well, at least so far. And let's take a little break here for a second and talk about another topic here so that we can pay the rent. Once in a while, we have to put an ad on here and remind you that this program, the Law Hour, that you're listening to, is brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, you know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, don't we? And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court as a fool for a client. Well, you know, on another side of the coin, those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. That's quite a statement. You know, I wish I'd thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, we watch our princes, our politicians, beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, don't we? But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, and if you have, I missed it. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process, the politicians, lawyers, or bureaucrats. And you know, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I'd like to add to that, you give me the judicial power and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in America is in our courts, not politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, so you're not out any money to find out whether or not I've got something interesting or intelligent to say. You can listen to it in your spare time and make that decision for yourself. Doesn't cost you anything to do that. And remember, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for home education. So this entire school is available for home education, or you can come to school here at the law school. And if you're online, you can go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on the email machine. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about circumcision here, and we're looking at the religious aspects of it, at least from the perspective of Richard W. Morris, the attorney, who on the one hand says that it's mayhem, child abuse, and an assault, and on the other hand he says, you know, even the religious people don't have a good argument. It is even a violation of the scriptures, it's a violation of the Bible, particularly the New Testament, and he cites a bunch of scriptures. Well, who are we to believe? And does the Bible actually teach against circumcision? Could it be that circumcision has been repealed? You know, kind of like we did with prohibition. We enacted a prohibition provision in our Constitution, and then we repealed it, remember? Well, those of us who are truly followers of Christ's teachings must realize that the world will hate us also. That's the obvious response of those who have no love for God. We as Christians should remember that we are not in this world to win some kind of popularity contest. We're here to do a job. We should want to serve God's Son who shed his blood for us. Peter reminds us that we should not feel strange about the fiery trials that try us. In fact, we should be happy if we suffer reproach for Christ, because through the cross we gain the crown. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by many because of me. And at that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate one another. He said that in Matthew 24, verses 9 and 10. Now, have you noticed the tone of the letters to the editor against our work, against circumcision and child abuse? You can believe that or what you want, but I pray that we, like Christ, be concerned about other people. After all, they, baby boys, are real people. Wouldn't it be nice if all baby boys could be born to parents who had compassion instead of the bizarre attitude that I've been hearing? I am so saddened by the total lack of compassion that is all around us today. Total indifference seems to be the order of the day. Very few want to get involved. I call it murder in the name of religion. It was religion, remember, not Christianity, that brought about the curse of circumcision in the first place. But how often do you hear it discussed at a Bible study group or church service? And when it is, it's only mentioned in a vague manner. Quoting from Paul's statement that the important thing is the circumcision of the heart. Well, my friends, this never really hits home. It is assumed that the issue is an insignificant one that only involves the simple clipping of a little bit of skin, obviously for cleanliness. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Our ministers will quote from Acts 7, verse 8, where it says, "Then he gave Abraham the covenant of circumcision." These misguided religionists have missed the full thrust of the meaning of Christianity. They are still teaching Judaism from Old Testament laws. Religion is probably the most misunderstood influence on human behavior that there is. Our religious leaders use their influence to impose their views on a variety of subjects that have absolutely nothing to do with faith. So why can't they be more outgoing and justice-oriented on the subject of circumcision? The only way to truly fight this battle against child abuse is to show that it all started with the Bible, the Old Testament part, the part that Christ and Paul asked us not to slide back into. Now you judge for yourself if continuing on with child abuse is going to offer salvation in the life hereafter. Now let's take some of the hell out of living. Yes, circumcision is one of the greatest human atrocities of our time. The sheer number is shocking enough, but behind each number is the face of a little boy with a mutilated sex organ, a wounded spirit, a child crying out for love. Who will look out for those children? Who will put an end to their suffering? Who will step forward with enough love to help them? I'll tell you who. It has to be people like you and me. That's who. How can any of us know? How can any of us say no to a child who is just waiting for someone to say, "You are special. You mean something to me"? To a helpless child, that would mean more than anything else in the world. These helpless little boys deserve all of the protection that we can give them. Let's give them a chance to grow up normal and natural. I do not believe that God made a mistake when he created man. I think he knew exactly what he was doing when he gave all men a foreskin. He made our bodies complete because that's the way he wanted us to be. And I thank God that my parents were Christian enough to leave me alone when I was a baby. Well, I guess that tells us the answer there. So our lawyer friend here, Richard W. Morris, is not circumcised. And I suppose when he went to his study groups, everybody must have been saying, "Oh, gee, you weren't circumcised." I remember as a youngster in high school, you'd go into the showers. You know, in those days, you'd have physical education, they call that phys ed class. And so when you got through, you know, you went and took a shower. And of course, naturally, we were all naked, and you could kind of look around, and you kind of see who was circumcised and who wasn't. And I can remember in Eureka, California, then I was probably, in our class, it was probably 40. I'd say it's probably 40 kids. And so when we were all in the shower, you know, there's about 20 showers or 30, I don't know how many shower heads coming out of the wall, and everybody's taking a shower, and you're looking around over here, and I would say that not more than 5, maybe 10 max were not circumcised, all the rest of us were. And you know how boys are. We all made fun, but we were in the majority. We all made fun of those guys that weren't circumcised. And I'm sure that they were pretty self-conscious. Of course, on the other side of the coin, if you were living in China and you went to the same locker room and took a shower and everybody in there would be uncircumcised and you'd be the only guy in there, or 5 of you maybe that were, they'd all look at you and razz you and make fun of you and say, "What happened over there? Did you get caught in the meat grinder? Hey, what happened? You know, you're a little short there, aren't you?" So it's one of those things that boys go through. Some few in those days were not circumcised. I don't ever remember anybody complaining to me, and I never complained to my father about the brutality and the mayhem that was committed upon me. Of course, you know, when you're circumcised as a baby, I don't know if it was painful or not. I can imagine that it was, but, you know, that was a long time ago, and I've been hurt a few times since then. I never thought about suing the doctor that circumcised me until this lawyer brought it up. Now I'm looking at dollar signs. You know, now I can sit here and say, gosh, maybe we could make some money here. Should I be thinking about money? Should I be thinking about suing the hospital and the doctor? And why should I get involved in trying to prevent circumcision? Why do I want to get involved with the Jewish religion? I mean, why do I want to interfere with Jews and other people who want to circumcise their babies? I know I did mine, and then, of course, after I read this guy's article, I've got about six or eight more in here I want to share with you, because there's a number of views. We're starting out here with the negative side. We're going to take a look at the side that says you shouldn't be circumcised, and nor should you do this to your child. So this lawyer brings up, first of all, the legal arguments from the state of California. Now he's bringing up the religious arguments out of the Bible. He says, you know, it's unchristian to circumcise your children. I don't know. Is it unchristian? Christians have been doing this for a long time. Should we stop Christian fundamentalists from practicing circumcision? We don't seem to stop people from practicing abortion. We've legalized abortion. It would seem like to me that killing these babies before they're born, or the partial birth abortion, where this baby is totally viable, and as the head comes out of the mother's vagina, they take a scalpel and stick it right in the base of the head and kill him. I imagine this lawyer could probably paint a pretty good picture there, you know, as the blood squirts out upon the mother's stomach as she's giving birth to this baby, and this brutal doctor sticks a scalpel into the partially born fetus's brain and kills it. And then they take the fetus and they cut it all up for body parts and sell it. They're worth about $25,000 each. I can see why abortion is such a valuable medical procedure. Each one of those fetuses is worth $25,000. Did you know the heart out of a fetus is worth $1,000? The brain is worth $1,500 and so on. Do you know that there's a price schedule for all of the body parts of a fetus, an unborn baby? Yeah, and then all the scraps are left over and they kind of grind it up and put it into cold cream and facials for you ladies so that you can look your best when you go to the party. Let's spread a little fetal tissue upon our faces tonight so that we'll look our best as we go out to the party. You know, I guess this lawyer, you know, could paint a pretty good picture along that line. I kind of wonder why it is that people are more concerned about dogs and cats than they are human beings, but it seems to be the hallmark of our times. This guy's really excited about a piece of skin. No, he doesn't seem to be too excited about the life of a child. Well, I'm not out here trying to get you off the abortion bandwagon. We'll let you make a decision for yourself on that. To a helpless child, that would mean more than anything else in the world. It goes on to say the New Testament, the Christian Bible. The New Testament is the Christian Bible. I didn't know that. This guy is really filled with information. I thought that the Old and New Testament was the Christian Bible, but maybe I made a mistake. Went to the wrong Christian church, maybe. The New Testament, the Christian Bible, teaches us that we should indeed be angry when we see an injustice, and circumcising a helpless baby boy is most certainly an injustice. Even Christ himself displayed anger when he threw the money changers out of the temple. And Paul certainly was disgusted with many of the early Christians when they wanted to fall back into following Jewish myths. I'm sure that all of you Jews out there will be enthralled by knowing that you follow Jewish myths in the Old Testament. You know, every baby boy should be rescued from the ordeal of routine circumcision, and the remain intact organization is doing everything in its power to do just that. There is no question that Christ finds special joy in taking a hopeless situation and pouring out his love. You know, I see this word love mentioned over and over in here. I guess we should also take a look at love and find out, what does the Bible say love is? Has anybody ever thought of looking that up? This guy uses it quite a bit here. It would occur to me that maybe there's a definition for love here. Pouring out his love without measure to make that impossible situation become a thing of the past. Christ is taking advantage of our willingness to help, but he needs more help. We can't do it all alone. We need people just like you to help Christ get his work done. Wait a minute. If Christ needs you to get his work done, I think hell's going to freeze over before it gets finished, don't you? And furthermore, it looked like to me that this God was powerful enough to kill the whole Egyptian army in the Red Sea in about 20 minutes. What in the world does he need you and me for? Isn't God powerful enough to carry out his own work without a lawyer? I thought I'd throw that one in there. But for some reason, this lawyer thinks that he needs this lawyer and me. Well, I'm kind of the opinion, not that I'm opposed to this lawyer. He's making a hell of a case here. Can't you just picture this in the closing argument to the jury? What if the lawyer was making this as the closing argument? He's just sued this doctor for $3 million for mayhem, child abuse, and malpractice, and so on. And this is his summation. And this is quite a little story, wouldn't you say? And he says, we can't do it all alone. We need people just like you to help Christ get his work done. That's because Christ, God, is weak and ineffectual, and he needs you and me. So let me be very direct. Is it worth giving a little of yourself to help finish the work the New Testament started? To help people to think clearly? Oh, okay. Well, evidently, if we need to help people think clearly, then obviously these people have muddled thinking. Everybody who practices circumcision has muddled thinking, and people who don't practice circumcision have clear thinking. I'm glad he pointed that out for me. Is that asking too much? Of course not, he says. Now, he asked me the question, is that asking too much? But he's made the decision for me. He said, of course that's not asking too much. Gordon, it's worth a lot of your time. It's worth life itself. If you and I don't speak out against this atrocity, who will? Children who are made in the image of God should not have to go through a mutilating operation. Life is too precious. Little boys deserve to discover their own sexuality, to live life to the fullest. Let's give them a chance. We are asking so little. All we want you to do is tell parents to leave their little boy as God made him, to make sure they are healthy and strong with a future to look forward to that they can really believe in. You've heard the expression, this place is like hell on earth. Well, the circumcision room in our nation's hospitals fit that description. There is no gentle side to circumcision that spares the innocent young being circumcised is demoralizing and dehumanizing. Pain and suffering are no strangers to 90% of the newborn boys that are born in a country that claims to be so civilized. Helplessness and despair are no strangers to the boy who is strapped down on a circumcision board. Yeah, I'm one of them. Somehow or another, it hasn't reached me yet. Now, I'm not suggesting that you rush out and get your kid circumcised. I'm just saying to you that, you know, I've gone through the process. My parents put me through it when I was 8 days old or maybe even younger. I don't know. Somehow or another, I'm not motivated, but I'm not telling you that you ought not to be. That's the purpose of the law, or is to present the facts, and then you make a decision. He goes on to say here, we're just almost finished. He says, if this is the way life begins for little boys, is it any wonder they become hostile later in life? I didn't know that I had become hostile because of my circumcision. In fact, I've never talked to any guy that was circumcised that ever said to me, you know why I'm so hostile, Gordon? It's because I was circumcised and mutilated when I was a baby. In law, we call this the power of suggestion. This guy is making some suggestions here. And I'm sitting here going, well, I think I'll think this through myself. Now, it may well be that I'm hostile, and it may well be that my hostility has come from my circumcision, but I did not know that until this guy told me that. So he planted that into my brain. And now I'm sitting here thinking about that for a moment and thinking, no, I just don't really think I'm all that hostile. And I've never connected my hostility with circumcision until this guy suggested that I'm hostile and that I connect that with my circumcision, so that that's supposed to make me real angry, so that I'm going to tell you not to be circumcised and don't circumcise your children. The Circumcision Act should be banished from the face of the earth. It is shocking to think people would do this terrible thing to their son in the name of religion. No human being should be forced into this because there are no medical reasons for this amputation. So I plead with you to join in partnership with us to help wipe out this unchristian act, and let's take some of the hell out of having, or living rather, for everyone we can, for everyone that we can, so that they will be happy to be alive. Well, listen, you know, I'm pretty happy to be alive. My name is George Gordon, and I'm pretty happy to be alive. And I'm circumcised. I'm not one of those that has been oppressed by medical practice or circumcision, and anyway. And I guess it's because I was circumcised at such a young age, I just didn't know what the problem was. By the way, I said that this second story here on Christianity in the Bible was written by Richard Morris. It's not. It's an article by a guy named Russell Zanger, or Zanger, I guess it is, Z-A-N-G-G-E-R, Russell Zanger. Now, we've got a couple of more articles in here, and one of them comes from Russell Zanger. I just happened to copy it on the back of this long 8.5 by 11 paper. So the first article was Richard W. Morris, attorney at law from California, and he said, let me tell you all the legal reasons why you should not have your baby circumcised. And then here's Russell Zanger, and I think that he is a preacher. He says, a small voice crying out in the wilderness, Box 47, Larchwood, Iowa. How can Christians sleep through this atrocity? Silent Christians, apathy in action. Got a picture of a little child down here, little boy. And I'm also one of those little boys that was mutilated when he was a child. And so they tell me that what my problem in life is that since I was abused as a child, I have now become a child abuser and had my children circumcised. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason that I had my children circumcised was because I believed that there was a biblical requirement for me to do that under the old covenant. And by the way, I'm not a Christian, so if I'm offensive to you people out there, I shouldn't be, because did you know that most of the people in the world are not Christians? Yeah, that's right. There are more Muslims in the world than there are Christians. More Muslims than Christians, although Christians are almost as many. And there are more other pagans out there than there are Muslims and Christians combined. So if you take all the people in China and India and all these various and sundry animal religions and so on. So I'm not picking religion over here, per se. I just wanted to suggest to you, this guy, Zanger, his issue, he says, well, this is Christian. Well, how do you reach 100 million Muslims out there that tell you plainly, well, we're not Christians and we practice circumcision? And I'm just sitting here telling you, well, I'm not a Christian either. And I practice circumcision. I don't think that circumcision is a Christian or non-Christian, rather, I should say, a Christian issue. I don't think that circumcision devolves upon this concept of, well, gee, you're a Christian, so therefore you should not practice circumcision, or you are a Christian, so you should practice circumcision. Let me word it like that. If it's scriptural, then I suppose that you should do it because God required it. Well, the God of the Bible, the Hebrew Bible. If you're Muslim and the Quran requires it, then I suppose that you do it because Allah requires it. It's a religious duty. People that are religious have a duty. And I'm kind of religious, I guess. You know, I think that we should obey God and keep His commandments. And if you've heard this program very long, I simply say that I think the Ten Commandments are a pretty good code of conduct. You see, I'm a little older than most of you people probably listening to me right now. I don't see a problem with thou shalt not steal. I don't think that I should steal your car, your lawnmower, or commit adultery with your wife, or cause you a damage and then not pay for it. I think that that the Ten Commandments are pretty good. And from that perspective, I've been a champion of the Ten Commandments. And I'm not necessarily a champion here of circumcision, but as we progress along, I think I can give you a more rational basis for being opposed to circumcision if you're opposed to it. And I think I can give you a better scriptural reason or need to practice circumcision than we've seen here from Mr. Zanger, or who's this other guy, Mr. Morris. Now, we're just about out of time here, so what I'm going to have to do is to cut this short, and we'll take this up next time here on the Law Hour, which will be tomorrow night, same time, same station. So the Law Hour, I should remind you, is brought to you by the Gordon Law School here in Isabella, Missouri. And for more information on the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, why don't you go to your website? It's georgegordon.org, or I guess I should say it's my website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service that's brought to you in the public interest. There's a signal. My time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. So I'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, goodbye, friends.